Let me come to the talk. So the talk is based on the paper which I cited here, and it is a small part of a bigger program, which is called quantum hydrodynamics, and in particular hydrodynamics of fractional quantum Hall liquids. Right? Hydrodynamics could be in the bulk or on the edge. It's propagating waves. And today's age. Although I will be happy sometimes if I will be invited again, I will tell you about the bulk. But today's age. Okay. So in this audience, probably I don't need to explain what fractional quantum Hall effect is, although I have two slides, introductory slides, but I assume that you know quite well what it is. But I would like to make a preliminary comment. Quantum Hall electronic liquids, right? So if I take electrons confined on a plane by a special device called heterostructure in a strong magnetic field, and this fermion is supposed to interact strongly through Coulomb interaction, they form this in a, a peculiar liquid, quantum liquid, which is called fractional quantum Hall effect. And the liquid has many interesting states. One of them, the simplest one and the most well-studied, is called Laughlin states, which corresponds to new fraction 1/3. And there are other states, maybe more exciting states, but interesting states. But I will talk today only about 1/3 state. So these liquids are topological. There are many ways to define what are which quantum field theory is topological, but let me adopt my favorite way, and the only way, my favorite way, to say that topological liquid is where every quantum state corresponds to a boundary state. So there is a bulk boundary correspondence. You give me a state on the boundary, I know what happened in the bulk. Like solving Laplace equation. So if you give me a boundary condition, I find solution in the book. There are other ways to define topological fluids, but let's keep this one. Okay, now, topology define many properties of the fluid, of the state, of quantums, not only of the ground state, but also excited states, low energy excited states, and sometimes even high excited states. Everything is hidden in the ground state, perhaps under certain assumption, and topology is a very powerful, topological characteristics are very powerful instrument to think about dynamics. What I would like to say in this talk, and this concept well developed and appreciated, what I would like to say in this talk is an addition to that concept, that there is not only topology, but there is something else, which also topologically related, namely nonlinearity. Okay. Okay. And I don't want to explain it what is now, but I would demonstrate, come back to this concept in the during the talk in the story. That's why it has. The title has subtitles. Fractionally charged solitons, emergent topology in nonlinear waves, and quantum hydrodynamics. Okay. Okay, let me come to the talk. So for those who are familiar with H-states and quantum Hall effect, I would like to spell some, at least some messages, the major messages. My major message is that waves on the edge of quantum Hall states are essentially nonlinear. And this is perhaps the major message of the talk. I would like to show how topology and global properties control nonlinearity. Another message is Interestingly, quantization emerged through nonlinear dynamics. I will decode this word. This might not be clear now. I will decode it. Quantum Hall effect, especially H states, are often popular. There is a popular description of them through the Chern-Simon theory. And if you take Chern-Simon theory literally, the way how it's written in the textbook, it has corrections. And these corrections, most of the textbooks say that these corrections are irrelevant for dimensional reasons. And I would like to show you that they are highly relevant and controlled also by topology. You throw them, you throw effect. There is a message which I probably cannot address. It's a relation between fractional quantum Hall effect and conformal field theory. There is tons of literature about this. I don't share most of written in this literature and present you some, have some different view on that. I'm not sure that I come to it, have time. And I will talk about only Laughlin states. Okay, so school textbook picture from undergraduate textbook, the whole bar. So electrons lives on a plane, magnetic field normal. That's various gates to control what happened on the edge. In this liquid, all states in the bulk are gapped, and they possibly to detect, but mostly through optics. But to make them alive, you have to overcome the gap in the bulk. But H states are soft. You touch the system, and something will propagate to the edge without gaps. So you put some energy, and all this energy will be transformed to some waves in the edge on the edge states. As more energy you put, or less energy you put, less energy will propagate the edge states. So they are free to excite. Free to excite. So this trivial picture, which you probably saw from any textbook, just kind of explain that motion on the edge is free and gapless. There is an interesting, there is a kind of interesting history. So let me briefly go through the history of quantum Hall effect. It has been first observed and understood by Hall himself, Edwin. He was American, I guess, maybe Canadian even, but pretty and pretty old ago. It's his dissertation on a new action of the magnetic and electric currents, American Journal of Mathematics, right? Then it's penetrating the textbook until 1980 when von Klinsing and the group discover integer Hall effect. 1982, fractional Hall effect. And that's since that, the subject developing without gap continuously. So before I start, let me review scales in the system. So it's an electronic system which is characterized by several scales. First of all, the major scale is so-called cyclotron frequency, which in typical 20 Tesla or so, it's about 30, 40 Kelvin. Okay. But there's another scale, which is given by Coulomb interaction between particles, which is a gap which occur only in fractional filling. And this gap depends on magnetic fields through magnetic lens, and it's typically 10K. The very, very existence of the fractional Hall effect is separation of these two scales. So this scale is supposed to be infinity large, and this is smaller. In experiment, it's not like that. It's only three times smaller, but for some reason, it works like infinity, so the dissipation is very, very small. If this inequality will be stronger, will be purely no dissipation at all at zero temperature, but actually it exists because ratio is not good, but but ideally, theoretically, it's supposed to be very strong condition, which is not. Okay. Now, this is the energy scale. So all study of fractional quantum Hall effect assumes that this is infinity, and all states are occupied the first Landau level. Okay, this energy scale. Then there are length scales. There is a magnetic length, which is about 10 nanometers. It's a distance between particles, more or less. The size of the device, it's in micrometers. And the typical number of electrons in a given device is 10 to the 6. I will not use it, but just an exception. This is a picture which privately given of Max Zinner interferometer, which is privately given to me by Itamar Gutman and Ron Shaba, both from Weizmann. So this is actually the device, and we are talking about this, what happened on this edge. Okay. So when cyclotron frequencies send to infinity, the very important property of states emerge, namely all the wave function in two-dimensional plane, which describe positions of electrons depends not on x and y, but depends on x plus iy, they're holomorphic. It's only happened when this is goes to infinity, but let's assume. Okay. It's a major problem, major beauty of fractional quantum Hall effect. If this is infinity, the only gap, the only scale remain is delta, and there are excitations below delta, and they are only on the edge, and they are called topological sector, and excitations above delta, but below omega c, they are in the bulk. I will not talk about them. Maybe next time. It's a bulk property. Okay. Most of properties, experimentally observed properties of quantum Hall effect, are coded by the so-called Laughlin wave function. So Laughlin wave function is written here. It depends on position of 10 to the 6 particles, this n 10 to the 6, too many to write it down. Nevertheless, usually written down. And you know, it's against common custom in the many body theory. Usually when something is about 10 to the 6, we're supposed to describe it by field theory, not by the wave function. Although in Laughlin days in lab, in Bell Laboratory, they thought about wave functions, so he wrote wave functions. So what I will do, I will write field theory. But it's written as a product of holomorphic distance between particles, which is called van der Mond determinant, to the power beta. Beta is an inverse fraction. If beta is 1, it's an integer quantum Hall effect, and beta 3, fractional Hall effect. But let me keep beta as a parameter, so it's inverse fraction. And the wave function written in the circular gauge, it's gauge dependent, but gauge is chosen circular, and this is this vector. And the only length, the only scale of length appears here is this magnetic, this is a magnetic lens. Okay. Now, important feature of this wave function, what I'm going to say now, I don't need this wave function, I need few properties. And the properties are very minimal. Wave function is holomorphic, that's what we discussed. And then degrees of zero when points are concise is larger than one, in this case, three. These two properties only, the rest not important.
So if you start mixing with like other levels, then the holomorphic property gets
gone.
Different.
It's gone.
How is it? How is your discussion robust with respect to that?
It's not.
So you really need to be on the first
level. To what I'm going to say, I need to be on the first Landau level. If there is other level involved, it's an interesting story. Right. I'm not ready to discuss it. I'm sure that it can. What you will see now will be can be developed, but I didn't. Okay.
Suppose I sit at one-third fraction in the second Landau level. How will the mathematics change?
Not much. But I want to specify the problem as much accurate as I can. Okay. So now, if you do Monte Carlo, say 1,500 particles, and ask where does this wave function, modulus of the function is large, right? Not zero. It's at that point. And this is what is called quantum droplet. So you can find particles here with some probability, but this probability is Gaussian small, exponentially small. There are points here, you don't see it. Most of them are concentrated here. It's a numerics square of modulus of this wave function. And the distance between these points is about magnetic lengths. Magnetic lens is controlled here. So now what you would like to study is how does this droplet move? If I hit it, I come with an instrument, say a hammer, and I hit this droplet, how does it move? Right? So it can, so the answer is they form fluid, liquid. This liquid is incompressible, so unlikely something propagates to the bulk, although the shape of the boundary easily changes. So think about a balloon, rubber balloon, which I fill by water. Water is almost incompressible. So now I can easily change the shape, but not the volume. And so something like this happened here. Therefore, if I make bump here on the boundary or change the boundary, I know everything around. Boundary correspond to the bulk. Okay. Now, Hamiltonian. Whatever Hamiltonian is, it's a ground state. I would like to put this system in the confining potential and to some Hamiltonian, the confining potential to confine this droplet in some very shallow potential. And about this potential, I assume two things. I assume that it's actually not very, it's gradient. So I put it in the cup. Its gradient is not too small, otherwise electrostatic will kill me, so it must supposed to kill electrostatics. But not too strong, the second derivative must be less than the gap, otherwise this potential excites things above the gap. So these two conditions are necessary to what I'm going to say. Now, so this picture represents H wave. So this is the bulk is here, and the edge sort of change. And I'd like to know how does it change. Okay. Now, there is a theory about it. It's called Venn theory. I remember the time we were in Princeton together when Venn wrote this paper. And 20 years or so, I want to present a correction to this. So the Venn said that, first of all, because it's a particle in magnetic field, there is a chiral motion only in one clockwise or anticlockwise direction. And then the density propagating along the edge, x is the coordinate of the edge. Chiral modes means that the Fourier component and the minus Fourier component are Hermitian conjugated. That means that they're going this way. That they obey a chiral algebra, and the fraction appears only here as a coefficient, and that the motion is linear. Namely, this motion of the chiral boson, it's a density, modes of density, this density propagates along with velocity, which is given by electric field divided by magnetic field, like written in the dissertation by Edwin Hall. Right? So this C naught is not universal. It's controlled by the electric field, by confining potential, by the slope of confining potential divided by magnetic field. So change potential, this change. But the algebra is universal. This is very successful theory, which excited many people, influenced many people, has a great impact. Capture many properties and missed some. So what does it miss? Okay, so the algebra is correct, no correction, and this is where topology is hidden. but this motion has a correction. So whether this correction is important or not, we will see in a second.
So because it's algebra, it's I just wonder whether there is some kind of a universal way to define a dense case so that you can show that there is no correction but you know, I kind of imagine, you know, if you add nonlinear back, you know, maybe even algebra can multiply.
It's a good point, and there is a, I'll be happy to discuss it, but algebra is not modified. Algebra is algebra. So it's very robust thing, so you can touch it, really. But motion, you can, and, but algebra is algebra. But I'll be happy to come to this. It's related to existence of cocycles, but we can discuss it. Okay, so let me give you a physical reason why the equation need to be corrected. So the equation really wave equation, chiral wave equation. Solution of this equation, you give me initial profile at t equals 0, and this profile change without changing, moves without changing in front of you forever to the right. Right? Without, so you created some profile of density. This is the edge, and this bump just move without being changed, translates. If you do the dent, it will move in the opposite direction, but also without change. But really, this is quantum mechanics. If you create a wave packet, it's change in front of you, right? There is interference. So it cannot be stay without change forever. Wave packet change, even for one particle, but for many particles too. Right? Since this shape which you create, so you hit, you take an edge, you come with a hammer, you hit it, you create this bump, right? And then this bump propagates along the sample, rotate, come back, and without changing shape. So if you run with this bump, it stays in front of you, and it's impossible for quantum mechanics, period. Right? But the problem is that the equation is difficult to correct. Simply because whatever terms you add, they will be different dimension, and therefore must require scale to keep dimension intact. Right? And they will be of higher derivatives, and usually we tend to neglect terms with higher derivative, which is very wrong. Good for some problems, but not good for other problems. But there is a scale available. This is a gap in the bulk. Usually, this equation is correct if we send not only cyclotron frequency to infinity, but also gap to infinity. But it's not, it's finite, and we don't want to excite things above the gap, but its existence actually present, and it's provided a scale. Okay, so now let me make some elementary digression to nonlinear hydrodynamics equations. This is from the textbook, a small digression. the first move up from wave equation is so-called Riemann equation. It has many different names, sometimes called Riemann-Hopf equation, sometimes Riemann-Bürger's equation. It simply says that the velocity is not constant, but also proportional to density. If density is more or less constant, you can keep it constant, but actually this is nonlinear equation, which is easy to solve, solved by Riemann in explicit form. Yeah, they're chiral.
Yes. I imagine Euro hydrodynamics will have a second order. So why?
No, hydrodynamics typically written, this is a chiral waves, they propagate.
But what in the Euro hydrodynamics, what is the reason to consider this kind of wave?
You can consider both, but what I wrote, they're chiral.
Oh,
and there is a reason for this. And let me explain the reason. I'll be happy to explain the reason. Suppose earthquake happened in Indian Ocean. It's happened. Then there is some splash, and then splash separated into parts, and one go to the East Africa, and another to Indonesia and hit the coast. As soon as they separated, they stopped talking to each other. So this is one of the, it's called asymptotic behavior in hydrodynamics, that in many special cases, the wave you create, which is not chiral, first separate, and then each part becomes chiral, you can forget about what happened in Indonesia and concentrate it on Somali coast, which has been hit too. Okay. Therefore, I wrote only chiral equations, having in mind this. Okay, so the next one is take Riemann equation, but add so-called dispersion terms with linear, but with higher derivatives. Okay, but this equation is non-conservative. This is Hamiltonian equation. It's not. This is viscosity. It's viscous. So the energy dissipates. So it's not a candidate. Quantum Hall system is in a good approximation. There's no dissipation. Okay, the only dispersion you can add and keep the system Hamiltonian is with the third derivative. And this is called Kertész-de Vries equation. This is what happened, wave propagating in the shallow water. But there is another wave to add dispersion, but keep the Hamiltonian structure. But then the equation becomes non-local. You add, you add the second derivative, but apply so-called Hilbert transform. Then the degree of derivative minimal, but there is a non-locality. That equation also in hydrodynamic book, but not in the first chapter, but in the chapter usually where people don't read it that deep. And it's called Benjamin-Ono equation, written by Benjamin in 1964 for some problems of classical hydrodynamics. Okay. Now, actually, what happened with the bump in all these equations which I wrote? So far, it's a digression, so forget about quantum Hall. So if you create a bump, then velocity of this point, of this bump, is proportional to the density of this point. So this point moving with velocity, which is proportional to the height. Therefore, that point moving with velocity higher, and you create an overhang. The thing overhang, and this is a general story related to Galilean invariance, absolutely general, happens no matter what, in any nonlinear systems, very simple, which tells that if you create initial bump, which is very, very smooth gradient, small gradient, then wait a time, the gradients will be infinite. Right. If somebody says that terms with higher derivatives must be thrown away because they're irrelevant or marginal, it's wrong. It's true if there is no hydrodynamic instabilities. It's true if you create initially something very, very smooth, and it remains smooth or maybe even smoother in time. But it's exactly the opposite. You create something very smooth, give it a time. It will be sharp. Therefore, this derivative. Eventually, there is a competition between nonlinear term, which wants things to overhang and make unstable, and dispersion term, which stabilizes. So this term doesn't like high gradients. These terms like high gradients, and they fight. So typical picture is the following. So before high gradients come, there is some interesting oscillations, some ripples. It's ripples, and these ripples propagates. So everything, so it's never overhang, of course, but before they start to talk to each other and create these ripples. Now, ripples. This is particularly from KDV, but it's also, if you do it for any others, you will not see the difference. It's a very general phenomenon. Yes.
In a certain spatial slice, there is two forms, right? That's a typical phenomenon for...
No, before it does overhang, it's never happened. It's artifact. It's never happened. Before it, it's getting sharper and sharper and sharper and start to do oscillations. This is called shock waves. And suddenly a new scale emerge. It's smooth, 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 and then very fast oscillation because it doesn't know what to do. Yeah, it's a singularity. Interestingly enough, that this has been seen in quantum world. This is an experiment. This ripple seen in trapped atom rubidium isotopes. But what is interesting about it is another general, very general phenomenon in hydrodynamics is that when these ripples developed, these ripples also moving with a different velocity, and soon they will separate. Right? And stop talking to each other. And each of them, when stop talking to each of them becomes a solitary wave. This is how solitons formation. So sometime you can hear the story that soliton equations are integrable, soliton hydrodynamic equations are integrable equations. And integrability, it's exotic property which may generically not happen. But it's wrong. This is the most stable configuration because no matter what you create, which is not solitonic at all, will eventually, through this shock wave phenomena, splits to sequence of solitons which stop talk to each other and move as a solitary waves. Right? So solitons are generic, but they cannot happen unless there is a non-linearity and dispersion, these two terms. Right? In linear waves, they don't exist. But non-linearity, okay. So this is some small digression. I must rush to quantum Hall effect. Okay, so now what I would like to claim, they move with different speed. But interestingly, those which are trailing move with a smaller speed than those which are in front. So they really separate. They never... Then they interfere and this happens, right? And it's happened, right? Then they interfere, but if it's long, it's... Okay, now the main thing. What I would like to say that at the edge of quantum Hall effect, now we come to quantum problem, correction to that equation, quantum Benjamin Ono equation. This is a nonlinear term. This is a dispersion term, which comes with second derivative, this first. But it must be conservative, so there is this symbol H, which represents Hilbert transform. And it's quantum equation, and the algebra is Venn's algebra. The coefficient kappa here is proportional to, it's built out of the gap. No gap, no scale, no correction. Okay. And this coefficient is not universal because the gap may be different in different systems. But this coefficient only measures the scale of time, how fast time moves. But the ratio between these two terms is universal and built out of fraction. And this is another topological property of the story. So topology, in a sense, coming as a coefficient in the algebra, but also as a ratio between these two terms. Right? So in a sense, they're universal because this you can always hide in the scale of time. This is non-universal element. C naught, non-universal, but you can always hide in scale of time too, but this ratio is universal. Okay, so this equation is Benjamin Ono equation, and
Sorry?
So you have a row H algebra. This one? Here? This is Venn algebra written not in momentum space, but in the coordinate space.
But that's usually a row algebra.
No,
here's a row H.
No. It's a positive mode and negative mode. And H represents, rho is a sum of positive and negative, and rho H sum of positive minus negative.
Okay.
So it's the same, it's your algebra, but written in a coordinate space. And I wrote it especially this way to show that this Hilbert transform is not a very exotic thing, right? Because it's happened here and here. So that's why I wrote it in this way. Okay. Now, so I have, in remaining time, I have two goals. Number one, I would like to show, to discuss properties of these equations and consequences. And second, how it happened, how it appears. Right?
So how did you get it?
I mean, how did I get it, right?
Yeah.
So the two things, I would like to describe its properties, and then how did I get it, right? But I would like to do it in two steps.
Can I very naively think of this from the ball, that because you have a new scale, right? Does that correspond to having like higher order from like a Maxwell term correction to the Chern-Simons?
No. It's correction to the Chern-Simons, but different kinds.
Different
kinds. Yeah. There are several corrections. One is also goes to Venn and Z. It's called Venn Z term. And this is another term. It's an extra term. But I would like to say that they all related. If there is one, then there is another. But this is correction. So, but I don't have time to rewrite it in terms of Chern-Simons. I'll be happy to, but it's easy, but I don't have time to do this. But concentrate on two things, properties and how did I get it. Okay, first of all, this equation is integrable. It has solitons. Although it looks kind of ugly, but it is integrable. And it's beautifully integrable.
So you say that it has only solitons, no simple bosons?
No, it is a propagation of bosons. It's a, no, there are waves, there are everything. But in particular, there are solitons. So it's an integrable equation like KdV. There are many solutions. Water on a lake moves complicated way. But in particular, there is solitary waves. It's a unique solution, some particular solutions. Okay. Okay. And this equation possesses two kinds of solitons. One is subsonic, which moves slower than speed of sound, than this synod. So if you're in the frame moving with this synod, it's move opposite direction. It corresponds to the dent, negative electronic charge on the dent in the density, kind of hole, quasi-hole, kind of quasi-holes, which manage to propagate to the edge. And then there is ultrasonic, something which moves faster. Remarkable properties of this equation that those solitons, three properties, have extremely simple form. It's Lorentzian. And the amplitude, it both, what I'm talking about, both quantum and classical. And the amplitude is related to the velocity. So this velocity is related to this amplitude. And such that the total mass which this soliton carry, the charge, is quantized. One charge subsonic, which is a dent, has charge nu, 1/3, built out of this coefficient. And another one, ultrasonic, has charge 1, it's a bump, built, which is in this normalization is 1. So it has a, they have the same form, but with q, either 1 or minus 1. One or minus nu, and nu is this coefficient. So if it is fraction 1/3, I have two solitons. One is corresponds to a bump, and another one corresponds to the dent. And this one has a charge 1, and this one has a charge 1/3. So they called fractional charge soliton or quantized solitons. If you ask me, typically for other equations, solitons can carry whatever mass you prescribe. It's your initial data. You give, you say, Show me a solenoid which carry a given mass, and it exists. But for this equation, it's unique. Solenoids are quantized. It can carry in proper units mass 1 or mass 1 third.
Suppose you add a little bit of extra bump.
Yeah, I will show you what happened. I will show you what happened. So it's unique equation where quantization, which where solenoids are quantized.
In the absence of nonlinear, since you have a compactification radius, that defines a particular pi soliton. And
then they disperse. Yes. So the wave, if there's no linearity, the wave, you create a wave, it disperses.
I see. So this is holding it.
And
it's a finite size.
Combination of dispersion, which wanted to disperse, and nonlinearity, which wanted to overhang, hold them together, but in an interesting manner. They quantized.
The compactification radius defines that charge.
It's a, yes. Yes. So they quantized. So what I would like to say that quantization comes through the dynamics. So you create something, let it go, this something through the shock wave separates to individual solitons, and remarkably, the soliton carry one third charge. Right? And this is unique way, is the only way to measure fractional charge, if you wish. You take an edge, you create, doesn't matter, you hit it by the infrared radiation, create some bump, and this bump will go around, destroy itself, but suddenly, if the system is sufficiently coherent, creates a stable coherent structure with one third charges. And they will not be destructible. And maybe measurable. Okay, equation famous in atmospheric physics, but there are some special clouds called morning glory. It's my picture. I saw it in Tenerife, in Canary Islands, where there is a strong temperature gradient inversion layer, and the clouds fragmented to the solitons. So they go this way, and they kind of moving. Okay. And this is this. Okay. So let me skip several pictures. And this is a maybe answer for what you have said. So if you create some, this is classical. If you create something which is not exactly four soliton, but some, they will send radiation back and open up for quantization. So the quantum guys, nice. Goes one way, and whatever is bad goes opposite way, separate. So they radiate some junk, but in opposite direction. Okay. Now let me come to how did I get it? There are several points. First of all, a small comment about hydrodynamics of incompressible fluid. So incompressible fluid, hydrodynamics of incompressible fluid may be complicated, but it's unique. It's not much to add to it. So if there is fluid incompressible, then there is a so-called, what happened on the edge, it's given, controlled by so-called kinematic boundary condition. Kinematic boundary condition simply means that particles of fluid sitting here, moves together with the boundary. They don't slide along the boundary. So if I know the boundary, this is bulk state correspondence. If you draw me this geometry, I know how this particle moves. It doesn't slide along. Right? It's a proposition. Right? Mathematically, it's given by so-called kinematic boundary condition. Y is the height. And V is velocity in what happened? Yeah. I don't know what to do. So it's dark now?
It's showing there.
It's showing there. Sorry? Yeah, so what to do?
1 minute break.
Huh?
1 minute break.
So it will warm up. Okay, so maybe I have only a few minutes left. Maybe I can change. Oh, thank you. Okay, so kinematic boundary condition, right? Important issue in hydrodynamic textbook. It said that if you measure the height of the boundary, this height related to the velocity x and y components by this equation, and this equation simply means that fluid does not slide through the boundary. If the boundary doesn't change, fluid doesn't move. All motion of fluid, motion of boundary, bulk boundary correspondence. Okay. The second thing is the chiral constraint. If particles sitting on the Landau level and wave function are holomorphic, it means that if you give me position of particles, I give you their velocity. Position to velocity. First order differential equations. Therefore, if you give me the density, I'll give you the velocity, and vice versa. So in order to make this equation condition become equation, I have to find V in terms of the height. But height is a density, and density determines V. So hydrodynamics of incompressible liquid is incompressible, so divergence of V equals zero. And now the question is how electronic density control velocity of the fluid. There is a popular picture of so-called quant flux attachment. It says that every particle, every electron has a kind of magnetic field is distributed. So the flux attachment. In hydrodynamic terms, it means that vorticity of the fluid, namely curl of the velocity, is multiplied times fraction is equal number of electrons. And this is what this flux attachment picture. I wrote it in words because it's incorrect. But it has corrections. Correction found by us some time ago. And indeed, vorticity is proportional to density, but with a higher order correction. And I can't, I have no time to describe it, how we get it, but it's almost. So once I know density, I will find velocity substitute to that equation. Okay. Important issue about it is important sum rule in fractional quantum Hall effect. Sum rule says that if there is this droplet and I make a difference between density and density of integer case when nu is 1, nu is 3 here, and integrate it with y and its coordinate towards the boundary, it is this coordinate, then suddenly there is a dipole moment. It's a dipole moment, which is equal 1 minus fraction. It's exact formula for Laughlin wave function, some rule, such that if fraction exactly 1, not integer case, no dipole moment, if there is dipole moment. This thing has been seen in early numerics in Laughlin wave function, for Laughlin wave function. And the first thing I saw it in some paper written by Morf. They detect this bump, didn't pay any attention to it. And but actually, it's here what happened. Look on this disk. It looks like it's uniform. So let me take a center and go along a radius, and I measure the density. And the density is uniform. And this is called plasma, Coulomb plasma. It's uniform. Open textbooks. It says the density is uniform. It's wrong. It's uniform up to the edge. This is what I show you is numerics. But on the edge, it shows a thing which is called overshoot. So there is a dipole moment located right on the edge on the scale of magnetic length. So this is what numerics says. And recently, we computed. No, you take the Laughlin wave function. This is 3. Beta is 3. Fraction 1/3. Square it. integrate over all coordinates by one, but one, that will be the density. The density is constant inside the droplet, but not on the boundary.
It's radially symmetric.
And it's radially symmetric, as you see from here. So it's a, I go along the radius, and I see the discount, the distances between these points. And suddenly, on the boundary, points will be closer.
Right?
But the inter, yeah, I'll show you the picture. No, no, this is mathematical exercise. Take this, what is written here, right? Object, square it, take multiple integral, send n to infinity, 10 to the 6. This is the picture which you have. Just from here. Okay, now.
So it's a, in some sense, it's a property of a classical plasma.
It's property of the classical plasma statistics. More detailed picture is the following. This line corresponds to beta equal 1, nu equal 1. It is function of error. It's an ERF function. It's known exactly. And it's absolutely smooth and it's a tail through the boundary. However, as soon as beta becomes more than 1, fraction less than 1, it shows overshoot, which growing with 1 over nu. So this, I know, goes to up to 5 or something, 7. But it's going up and developed oscillations. Okay? Okay. So if you subtract density for fraction 3, 1/3, from density from fraction 1, no fraction, it's nothing except the boundary. This looks like an artifact, but in fact, it is not. The true property when this distance magnetic length go to 0, the limited shape of the density for nu equals for some fraction is density of integer case plus delta prime, double layer, dipole moment, with a universal coefficient, which is 1 minus nu divided by 4 pi, related to the Van Zee term. Eventually, you can find it from there, from the shift. From the shift, you can just, it's coming from the shift. Okay. Now, my final slide. If I have relation between density and velocity, and I have this density, I can compute velocity. Then I substitute it to the kinematic boundary condition and obtain Benjaminon equation. It's a complicated mathematical procedure. You have to keep track about normal ordering. It's all quantum. Headache took me years. But logically, it is more or less this step.
So this is excitation about this dipole profile.
A dipole profile. Right. So let me come to the equation. Yeah. So this term is more or less generic, easy to obtain, and actually previously obtained by Sakita and collaborators. And there is a very simple reason for this. If you take only this term, the equation becomes unstable, this overhang propagates, and it's a disaster. It has no solution section. This small overshoot on the boundary, which distinguish fractional quantum hole from integer quantum hole, this delta dipole moment or double layer on the boundary produce this term. Together, they support solitons, and the solitons fractional, have a fractional charge, right? So it's come all together, right? So this equation, because it's quantum, it must be substituted by the algebra, and this is Venn's algebra.
So they create a whole soliton. How is the charge density distributed in this
profile?
The Lorentzian. But that deficit charge should be distributed radially.
No. In You mean globally, right? So if this thing, right? So because liquid is incompressible, nothing happened in the bulk. So if you make a dent here, something will pop up here.
This dent should have some radius, right?
This way.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a formula. This is a formula. They precisely, they're very simple. You know, solitons usually have written in terms of transcendental function. In this case, it's very simple.
Maybe let me try to understand this. So these are first time compound term basically described. When the droplet have given the radius, the velocity can be a little bit different. So there's a
density dependence
of velocity.
Yes, this is one effect.
Yeah. But however, what you find is that once you have this first effect, the second effect has to
come
appear right together.
Yeah, because of the shift.
And but then there can be one way to understand is falling. You know, when the velocity have a dependence on density, you know, then there's some shear, you know, when the wave
Then there's some shear.
And the shear makes this some self-rotating, which coupled with some kind of a spin.
That's another way to saying this. I don't want to. It's a bit for specialist experts, but I briefly say because you ask this. There is a recent concept in hydrodynamics of fractional Hall effect, which is called anomalous viscosity. It's also called odd viscosity. It's also called Hall viscosity, and that's the following. If there is a shear flow, then in viscous fluid, there is a force which affects along this flow, such that they stop this particles, so they eventually equilibrate. It's called viscosity. But this produces dissipation, so it doesn't exist in Hall effect. Maybe I can show you. Go to my digression. Oh, sorry. Sorry, wrong way. Yeah. Yeah, it's this case, which doesn't have. In a fractional quantum Hall effect, there is also kind of viscosity, but it's supposed not to produce work, to dissipate. So it's a force acting normal to the shear. Eventually, and this is universal force, which kinetic coefficient is written through fraction. Eventually, this force push the flow toward the boundary if the boundary exists, therefore creating a double layer on the boundary, right? And you can see it in the Laughlin, just in the Laughlin wave function. You can see this bump. So it's related to some special forces acting in the bulk, which push. Now, when I create a wave along the boundary, right, it means that I create a shear. So something here moves faster than here. And then there is a force. They push it here, but the density cannot be changed. It's incompressible. So they all concentrated on the boundary, this extra bump. Right? So the distance between these particles is smaller than the distance between this particle. It's magnetic length divided by 3, actually, right? And this concentration of particles, this layer, change hydrodynamics such that nonlinear effects stabilized by dispersion effects, which come from here, and produce fractional Hall solitons. So in the book, textbook on quantum fractional Hall effect, we heard about fractional charge of quasi-Hall. If you make a Hall here, it carries fractional charge. So you actually cannot do one, you must do 3 of them. If you remove one electron with charge 1, so you create 3 guys, but well separated. But there is a similar story on the boundary. So this is also 1/3. And exactly 1/3, not close, but precise. So it is a quantization, but on the boundary. And it comes from a combination of this topology to linear, nonlinear effects. So topology kind of give rise to nonlinear effects. You throw nonlinear effects and dispersion, you lost part of the information topology provides. So it must be kept together. And then it will be solid. Okay, thank you.
In your slide, there is something about central charge. You may have hard time to talk about. Maybe can you explain a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes. That is okay. Okay. This fraction, this Benjamin Ono equation, it's a very special equation related to conformal field theory. How it's related to conformal field theory? It's kind of developing, not well understood, but developing story. But the rough idea is the following. Let me say. Consider a Bose, consider conformal, okay, is this a remark for experts, right? So consider conformal field theory with central charge less than one. This theory can be written through a Bose field. And there is a stress energy tensor of conformal field theory, which is, holomorphic part is bilinear with respect to this field, with gradient to this field, and has a linear correction, but with higher derivative. And this is object is called alpha naught. Okay. This is in the textbook of conformal field theory. Okay. Then components of this T called Virasoro operators, they form Virasoro algebra, all this stuff. Now, conformal field theory can be bulk and boundary. So if you take a boundary, then you project this this stress energy tensor to the boundary. It has components. Normal components, yy, it's traceless. Xx the same, and xy component. Boundary condition says that xy component is zero, and normal component is kind of force which makes these bumps and dents. Okay. Fine. What is written here is a normal to the boundary component. Usually it's written as holomorphic term in the bulk, but I wrote it especially on the boundary. Component normal to the bound. Okay. Now, if you say that density is solution of the Poisson equation, and from hydrodynamic point of view, that would be a stream function of the flow, it's a name. So you give me a density, I give you phi. Then equation written in this form with this stress energy tensor is Benjamin Ono equation. Right? So in the equilibrium, the stress energy tensor vanish. But in not equilibrium, it's changed geometry and generate motion. And this motion precisely Benjamin Ono equation. So this motion can be seen as a perturbation of conformal field theory. Purely conformal, this is zero. But time plays a role of a perturbation parameter. Now, if you look on this stress energy tensor, then its central charge is given by this formula. This is how they are related.
The unitary CFT that you get is
better. Play no role. Plays no role. It's not unitary.
So there's a final.
It's just a general formula for whatever nu you want three, okay. Some number. Its central charge is negative actually.
So it's not equal to 1.
Not equal to 1. Right. And maybe my, no, okay, so maybe I can make comment, but after we close, about relation between 1 and less than 1,
yeah.
But after we finish.
One question is, density profile at the boundary reminds me of precursor to Wigner crystallization.
Wigner crystallization, because absolutely.
Density so is decreasing.
It's a liquid.
It's a liquid,
but on the boundary has no space. Space reduced, and their crystallization is powerful, but it doesn't crystallize, but it shows some oscillations towards the boundary and the splash, which is a precursor of crystallization, which happened close to the boundary, but still liquid.
Second question, suppose you have a
But you're absolutely right. So if nu getting smaller and smaller and smaller, this oscillation is getting more profound and propagate deeper and deeper to the bulk. So this is a kind of attempt to Wigner crystallize. So those, you see these oscillations, right?
So at some stage, so this is radial.
It's
so
radial.
It's also angular, maybe numerically at some lattice.
Yeah, you can see traces of triangular lattice numerically, but not in the bulk. But in the boundary, they kind of, but not, resolution is not sufficient to say that it's really happened. But it's want to make super solid, but it can't. It doesn't.
Second question, if you have a boundary which is like a line, you can talk about boundary which is like a straight line, and you can talk about propagating excitations. So in your picture, you look at the spectrum, do you have bosonic branch, and then on top of that, solitonic charged branch?
Yes.
With a finite mass.
Yes. So
the neutral bosons are like Goldstone balls, linear.
Yes, it's a waves. It's a simply small waves.
And then you have
on top of them,
which is charged one third and one.
And minus one third,
minus
plus
one.
One.
And then, what's the significance of that mass?
This is a gap from, it's coming from the gap from the bulk.
Just from its relative.
Yeah, so it's you take a gap from the bulk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And write it in this form. This is magnetic length. And this is your kind of effective mass, which is usually 10 times of band mass of electron. It's heavy, right? So because this is less than, let me see.
So that means
roughly
quasi hole, which has a finite size, the bulk, you can adiabatically transport it to the
boundary. And that's what happens.
And then maybe sizes become larger, not infinite.
It can be these bumps. Yeah, so. Good point. So take a quasi hole in the bulk. It has charge one third, minus one third. Adiabatically move it to the boundary. Boundary deform, but in very particular way. In very particular way, it's a Lorentzian deformation, but the charge will be one third.
So
and they form this, it's deformation of, it's seen as a soliton. It will propagate without changing shape.
So the new thing is that Laughlin soliton in the bulk has a finite size. So the boundary also is finite, but maybe bigger, not infinite.
No, not infinity.
Because like if you have solitons in, like, if you look at a spin-on in Heisenberg chain, it's also a soliton, but the form factor is infinite.
Yeah, it's similar, actually. It's pretty similar. Mm-hmm. OK.
What's the correction to the
book? Ooh, then you bring me to another subject. I can write me, but it will take me some time. What you're asking me is the following. Equations of motion can be obtained from the action. So you want me to write the action which minimum produce this equation. The first term will be Chern-Simons term. The second term will be Van Zeet term. But then it will be one more term, which is responsible for this effect, which if you wish, I can write you after.
I have another short question, sorry. Okay. Duncan Halliday gave a talk just 2 days ago about an important variable in quantum algebra, in quantum geometry, and try to elaborate it. Modification of
Chern-Simons
theory in some fundamental. Is there any relation between?
You know, I don't understand him, but I feel that we are talking about the same things. But I don't understand the word, actually. I heard this. I don't understand. But as usual, he probably is right, but in some his own way. And I feel that it's the same story. But you can't really shaped.
So he gave a long talk.
So I feel he's here. I think. Okay. I don't know.
Connection.
I don't know, but it's. I feel it's close. Mm-hmm. Thank you.